This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:36 in the morning, you're listening to The Morning Run with Wong Xiaoning and Philip C. Today, of course, is Wednesday, the 3rd of February. And in about half an hour, we're going to have the breakfast grill. Philip, what's the special for today?
Sausages and eggs.
Okay. Charming.
Well, no, I'll be speaking to James Tan. He's the executive director of Iconic Worldwide Berhad. So they have an ambitious target of becoming one of the world's top rubber glove manufacturers. So the question is, will he be able to prove its doubters wrong? Right. So we'll be speaking to executive director James Tan.
You mean
Tan.
You'll be speaking to
I'll be speaking to ED James Tan, where he'll share about his plans and outlook for 2021.
Oh, exciting stuff. So do tune in after the 8 a.m. news bulletin. But in the meantime, we're looking at Myanmar because the military there has seized control of the country for 1 year. Its de facto leader, Aung San Suu Kyi, and other top political leaders have been detained. It would seem that the military is acting on claims that there has been election fraud in the country's elections last November, in which the Suu Kyi's National League for Democracy won.
Yeah, but they've offered no proof of such fraud. Now, as a background, Myanmar made a shift from a military dictatorship to a democracy about a decade ago. And at that time, that prompted the US and EU to lift sanctions on the country. And in the years since, it has restored its status as a vital economic player in Asia. However, the army does still have wide powers under the constitution.
So for a view on the development in Myanmar and what does it mean for the country moving forward, we're speaking to Sebastian Strangio, the Southeast Asia editor with The Diplomat. Thanks for joining us this morning, Sebastian. Now, for those who have not observed Myanmar so closely, help us understand where this started. What's the impetus for this military coup?
Well, thanks for having me. Well, it's very, you know, in some ways, quite unexpected and runs counter to a lot of expectations. Philip, you mentioned before, you know, that the constitution that the military has just, you know, essentially abrogated, you know, was designed by the military in some ways to lock in its power. And it you know, contains a host of safeguards for the military's central role in Myanmar's politics. It gives the military 25% of parliamentary seats, the control of three powerful ministries, and you know, sweeping powers to declare states of emergency and so forth. And so, you know, in many ways, this coup is sort of, you know, it's overriding a system that the military specifically designed to ensure its hold on power.
Do you think it's driven from this insecurity that, you know, they are going to get away with it, the parliamentary democracy, because that's what they did with Suu Kyi, right? Where initially she couldn't become the leader because of her relationship with the two sons who are British born, but they managed to work around it and get her appointed as state councillor. So is that the insecurity from the military that's why they've decided to clamp it down?
Well, I think there's a, you know, there's a certain degree of insecurity that, you know, despite all of these safeguards that were put in place, including, as you say, a provision that prevents Aung San Suu Kyi from serving as president, you know, that there was the USDP, the Union Solidarity and Development Party, which is the army's electoral proxy, has failed to make any sort of impression at the elections at all. So, you know, one line of argument is that the military expected that it could win around a quarter of parliamentary seats and that with the quarter granted to it under the constitution, it could guarantee itself a role in politics, the ability to appoint ministers and to maintain a, you know, a decent amount of control. As it stands with, you know, massive landslide victories for the NLD and Aung San Suu Kyi in November and also at the election in 2015, it's sort of shown that the military and leading generals and figures within the military are really unable to, you know, the system they've designed is essentially locked in perpetual NLD governments. And, you know, we also have to enter the murky realm of speculation about personal motives. We have Min Aung Hlaing, who's the commander in chief of the military and now is the de facto leader of Myanmar under the coup government. You know, he has long been rumored to have presidential ambitions. And perhaps, you know, there's also sort of a sense in which perhaps the NLD, by refusing to investigate the claims of electoral fraud that the military was putting forward, has, you know, is sort of prompted a reaction to sort of, you know, an emotional reaction of some degree to sort of put the NLD back in its box and sort of show it who the real sort of like guardian of the nation is. But, you know, in many ways, this runs counter to what one would expect.
So, Sebastian, what's happening next? I mean, what might we see? Because the military says they're only going to do this for a year.
Well, it's very hard to say. I mean, we still have yet to see what the reaction, you know, of the rest of the world will be. We, you know, countries have all, you know, have mostly condemned the coup, but that, you know, that's mostly virtue signaling at this point. What they need, you know, and that what comes next is sort of decisions about how they're going to react, whether they're going to reimpose sanctions on Myanmar or take another approach. So, you know, there's a certain amount that needs to go on there. But, you know, this gives the military the ability now, you know, if they hold new elections in 1 year's time, you know, that even if they have pledged to hand over power to the winner of that election, a lot depends on which parties are allowed to run and under what restrictions. And so there's now a huge amount of scope for the coup leaders, if they're able to secure themselves in power in the short term, to engineer a more secure position for the military over the long term, whether that's a quasi-civilian form of government or whether it's a more extended period of military rule, you know, remains to be seen at this point. But I think it's safe to say that the Myanmar people, you know, are not happy with this. We've seen just in the last day or two, groups of people, you know, refusing to work under the military government in Yangon and Mandalay and other cities in Myanmar. People are out in the streets banging pots and pans in a coordinated effort to show their displeasure at what has happened. And I think that, you know, for a young generation that has enjoyed this 10 years of relative political freedom, you know, the democratic genie might be difficult to put back in the bottle.
That's right. And I think if you compare the first and second coup, if we take about the issues in domestic, I mean, the domestic uprising is definitely more felt and more present in this case. But from an international perspective, do you see the responses very different from the first coup versus this?
Well, back in 1988, you know, when the military last seized control, Burma was perceived as sort of this was before the end of the Cold War. It was sort of perceived as a strategic backwater. There was one U.S. official told the American press that, you know, this is a place where we have no strategic interests, and therefore it's a place where we can stand on our moral values. Things are very different now with the rise of China, just, you know, with which Myanmar shares a 2,000-kilometer border, and the protection that China has offered the government as it's come under pressure for human rights abuses, the treatment of the Rohingya people in Myanmar. This has put the Western countries in a bit more of a constrained situation. I mean, they run the risk of either taking a very strong line and sort of pushing Myanmar onto heavy reliance on China, or doing nothing and sort of essentially condoning a military takeover. And the Biden administration in the United States has made it very clear that it wants to stand for, or intends to stand for, democratic values around the world after the 4 years of Trump. But Myanmar poses a serious and early challenge to that ambition.
And I want to focus on Aung San Suu Kyi and her role in all this. I mean, what's going to happen to her? Because at the moment, we understand she's under house arrest. But realistically, I mean, what can a party do without her? Because she's very much the icon of the party.
Well, I mean, at the moment, the party has sort of been driven into not quite underground, but, you know, it's very much under siege, and there's not really anywhere it can go from here. I mean, the military has troops in the streets. It has a long track record and shown itself to be very willing to use violence in order to put down popular protests. And so it remains to be seen what the NLD can do. You speak to, an interesting question with regard to the longer term future of the party, which is that it is very heavily reliant on Aung San Suu Kyi as a personality, as a symbol, and as a leader. And she is someone who, you know, is getting on in years. She's in her mid-70s and, you know, can be expected to retire within the next 5 to 10 years just by virtue of her age. And so, you know, what happens then remains to be seen. The party has a need to sort of push through younger leaders. But all of this is going to be moot if the military does not provide an opportunity for the NLD to compete in free and fair elections in the coming years. So, you know, that is sort of the primary question facing the party at the moment.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Sebastian Strangio of The Diplomat and the author of In the Dragon Shadow, Southeast Asia in the Chinese Century. Now, like you say, since I mentioned China, China is the big brother of Burma, right? Sharing this 2,000-kilometer border, right? And so far, they've been very diplomatic in their, their comments on what's happening in Burma.
I think China is such an important piece now, and the US will struggle to formulate a meaningful response because, you know, 10, 12 years ago, they didn't view Myanmar as that strategic. Now it's a booming economy. China is basically encroaching in its territory. President Biden wants to assert himself in his first diplomatic challenge. So I'm really struggling to see how the US can formulate an impactful response, actually. That's going to be a very interesting challenge.
And does that change anything in Burma? We are talking about a country that's been run, honestly, despite being a democracy on paper, run by a military for the last 50 years. So they might just say, okay, you know, sanction us, do what you want, but life goes on. But up next, we'll be speaking to Dr. Niaz Azadullah of the Global Labour Organization on the cost of children being out of school amidst COVID-19. Stay tuned for that, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.